Lewis uses this metaphor of festering, decaying flowers to show us that culture, as beautiful as it is, can become rank when misused.
I'm William O'Flaherty from All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast, available through EssentialCSLewis.com. Allison Whelan is with me to discuss an essay entitled Lilies That Fester. As you may recall, Allison was previously with me talking about the essay Meditation on the Third Commandment, and she also was an interviewee about her CSL Book Club website that provides a growing list of discussion questions on books by and about Lewis. Welcome back to All About Jack, Allison.
Thank you.
Well, now, I also want to note that thanks to Allison's website, I didn't have to work quite as hard to develop my questions for this discussion because she basically allowed me to pick from what she has done on her site, since she has done where the essay is mainly found, which is in The World's Last Night. Again, the essay is Lilies That Fester, and some background information will be helpful to this essay. The title is from a line in Shakespeare, one of his sonnets, that states, "Lilies that fester smell far worse than weeds." And by the end of our discussion, you'll understand some of what Lewis is meaning when he makes this reference. While available in the collection of essays, again, it's The World's Last Night. It first appeared in the April 1955 periodical called 20th Century, and is essentially a rebuttal to another article in that same issue. Allison, to start things off, can you add more context to this to help the reader get into the mindset of what Lewis is addressing?
Yes, this essay has to do with the uses and misuses of culture. Here, think literature, poetry, art, music. Now, Lewis's choice of title is telling. Lilies are quite fragrant flowers. But remember for a moment when you've had cut flowers in your house. After about a week, the water becomes cloudy, and when you go to empty the vase, it's nasty, like swamp water. The stems of the flowers are slimy and decaying, and the whole thing stinks. At that moment, a simple dandelion, a weed, is preferable to the lily. Lewis uses this metaphor of festering, decaying flowers to show us that culture, as beautiful as it is, can become rank when misused. And by comparison, the simple common things, the weeds, can be more pleasurable.
Now, in terms of culture, Lewis contrasts in this essay culture for the sake of enjoyment with culture for the sake of self-improvement and or advancement. Are these mutually exclusive? Do you think his distinction has merit?
Well, elsewhere in his works, Lewis contrasts using art versus receiving art. When a person reads literature, say, solely for self-improvement or to appear erudite at a social gathering, he is using art. On the other hand, when he's reading for the love of it, he is receiving art. Lewis gives a couple of examples in the Lilies essay. First, he contrasts some what he calls young, transparent snobs feigning enjoyment of great port with a group of elderly ladies smacking their lips over a hot cup of tea at a cafe. Next, he describes a sherry party where a group chatters about culture, but not one word about enjoyment of any art. This is held up against a schoolboy on the bus, oblivious to the world because he is engrossed in a science fiction book. Lewis utilizes this last example again in An Experiment in Criticism, where the book discussion of the adults downstairs is dominated by fashion, and in that sense, T.S. Eliot was in and Milton was out, while upstairs, a small boy is reading Treasure Island by flashlight under the covers. Mm-hmm. Lewis says the only real literary experience in the household was the one taking place in the upstairs bedroom. Lewis contends that once you start using art in a pretentious way, you forfeit the pleasure of experiencing it. Are the two purposes mutually exclusive? That depends on the individual. There are some books we read because we do need to gain an understanding of the subject, i.e. self-improvement. but we should always be reading for pleasure as well. On my nightstand, for example, you will find both classic literature and legal thrillers, Lilies and Dandelions.
Now, something Lewis doesn't mention in his essay in terms of an example, but I couldn't help think about when Christians will, like, read the Bible to try to impress other people. I think this kind of applies as well, don't you?
Yes, very much so.
Well, now, what happens when culture becomes a means to achieve? What response does Lewis advocate?
In the second part of the essay, Lewis sounds a warning about what we've come to know as political correctness. As the aristocracy was losing power in Britain, a new, what he refers to as the managerial class, was taking its place. Lewis foresaw a society where the cultural elites, via the educational system, served as gatekeepers to the managerial class. To gain admittance, you didn't just have to be well-educated, but you had to appreciate the same art and literature and echo the same evaluation of it. So students are faced with the choice of reading the authors the culturally empowered class approves of, or being kicked off the educational ladder at a low rung and disappearing into the proletariat. Lewis sees a couple of undesirable consequences from this. First, you don't get the best leaders because culture does not necessarily qualify men to rule. And second, innovative people who might start a new school or movement in the arts are squelched from the get-go. Lewis advocates rebellion against what we now refer to as political correctness. He does a beautiful job of describing the problem, but doesn't really give specifics of what this rebellion will look like or how to dismantle the system.
And, of course, this essay, which I guess I haven't mentioned, is somewhat longer. If there was an audio version that existed, it would probably run close to 25 minutes. And his introduction kind of sets the stage. He starts to paint a picture, and we chose to not focus in on that. And in a few minutes, we'll get back to some closing thoughts, which will expand on some of the ideas with the essay. At this point, Alice and I haven't shared with each other, so we don't know if we have the same quotes or not, but I picked out three quotes. Now, there are various, you know, things that stand out. Some of this could be isolated. In fact, the first quote for me that I picked was, "Those who read poetry to improve their minds will never improve their minds by reading poetry," which, of course, the main focus is not on poetry, but that's one of the examples of what, like, a cultured person would do. Then later in the essay, he notes that culture is a bad qualification for a ruling class because it does not qualify men to rule. And then he goes on to give some examples of what would be. Well, let me just share those two, Allison, and let you have your turn.
Okay, I have a couple as well. One is, it means that you cannot get in without becoming or without making your masters believe that you have become a very specific kind of person, one who makes the right responses to the right authors. And about the rulers, he says, "The higher the pretensions of our rulers are, the more meddlesome and impertinent their rule is likely to be, and the more the thing in whose name they rule, here I'd say be it culture or even faith, that thing will be defiled."
Ah, very good. In fact, that was going to be one of mine. I'm not sure if I could have articulated that quite as well. Did you have any other quotes?
Just a little humorous one. He says towards the beginning, "Those who have greatly cared for any book whatever may possibly come to care someday for good books." And I wish I knew that quote back when I was a child and my mother was worried that I was reading too many Nancy Drews.
Well, yeah, here is a humorous one that I don't know if we want to elaborate. We'll just leave it to people to go ahead and if it's been a while since they've read it, to remind themselves what he was saying by getting a copy of the essay collection, The World's Last Night. But he notes that a live dog is better than a dead lion. So, and of course, there's a context to that, and people will have to be sure to read the essay to find out. But now then, let's move on to talk about other works that deal with some of the issues that Lewis addresses in this essay.
Well, some of these ideas are further developed in An Experiment in Criticism. There he describes the reader as, quote, status seeker in chapter 2, and then expands the whole idea of using versus receiving art in chapters 3 and 8. And along the humor lines, G.K. Chesterton wrote an essay in 1901 called A Defense of the Penny Dreadfuls and Why We Shouldn't Look Down on Popular Literature. This is available on the Internet just by Googling Chesterton and Penny Dreadful. And finally, Alan Jacobs, who, by the way, wrote a biography of Lewis called The Narnian, has a small book titled The Pleasures of Reading in an Age of Distraction, which is filled with nuggets for book lovers. But one chapter in particular deals with how you can drive yourself crazy by reading for self-improvement. He relies on Lewis for support in his advocacy for reading at whim.
All right. Well, again, we've been discussing the essay Lilies at Fester, one of Lewis's essentially longer essays, and we're leaving some different points out for the reader to glean themselves. But to wrap things up, Allison, are there any final thoughts about what Lewis addresses in this essay that you feel our listeners will find especially helpful?
Well, I would encourage people to go back to That Boy with a Flashlight Under the Covers. Read what excites you, what you don't want to put down. Forget about the critics and the experts and simply enjoy.
Ah, wise words, indeed. Okay, well, again, this has been Allison Whelan. We mentioned earlier about Allison's website. Allison, go ahead and share what that address is for those who are just listening to the audio. Of course, we'll have the link in the show notes.
Yes, it's cslbookclub.com.
Okay, and of course, no spaces. Of course, nowadays, if you did put spaces, the search engine will automatically get you to it. You just have to click an extra time or something. Well, again, Allison has been my guest. Be sure to check out her website, and we encourage you to read this and the other essays that has been discussed in this series. This one, again, Lilies That Fester, and that's best found in The World's Last Night. Thanks, Allison, for joining me.
Thank you.
Thanks also to you, the listener, for being interested in my All About Jack podcast, which is a feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm William O'Flaherty, the creator of the show, as well as the host. Don't forget to check the show notes for links mentioned in the program, as well as finding other information about C.S. Lewis. You can locate the show notes either at EssentialCSLewis.com or AllAboutJack.podbean.com. The Podbean location is where the audio files are hosted, and it can be a little easier to find the shows there. Again, that's AllAboutJack.podbean.com. Podbean is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N. The other location, EssentialCSLewis.com, provides links back to the podcast location and also includes a variety of articles related to Lewis. That includes a daily fact, quote, and quiz question related to him, along with a series exploring quotations attributed to Lewis that may not be from him. I hope you enjoyed today's show enough to want to share it. Also, feel free to leave comments about the program online and consider listening to other shows. If you follow the show either on Podbean or iTunes, you may have noticed that lately I've been reposting older shows typically during the week between the official postings I do each Monday. If you don't know how to find the show on iTunes, then be sure to check the show notes for a direct link. Again, those notes can be found either at EssentialCSLewis.com or AllAboutJack.podbean.com. This episode of All About Jack is sponsored by Shelley & Son Books. You can find Shelley & Son Books online at ShelleyandSonBooks.com. Shelley is spelled S-H-E-L-L-E-Y. They specialize in rare books by Lewis, Tolkien, and the Inklings and friends. You can order by their website, phone, or email, and you can browse and search their catalog online. Again, find them online at ShelleyandSonBooks.com. Finally, don't forget about my book. It's called C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell, a companion and study guide to the Screwtape Letters. You can learn more about it by visiting ScrewtapeCompanion.com. There you can get a free 20-page sample of the book and also pre-order it if you like. Again, that's ScrewtapeCompanion.com.